Broadway icon John Cameron Mitchell channels the essence of his glam rock icon, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, for one night only at Arts Centre Melbourne this July. So put on some makeup, turn up the A-track, and pull the wig down from the shelf. John Cameron Mitchell, July 10 at Arts Centre Melbourne. Book now. Joy sponsor.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Thursday, the 5th of July. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Tom Morgan. Tonight on the show, we speak to the previous program manager of the Safe Schools and Anti-Bullying Initiative in South Australia, which is no longer providing training and support for schools to become a more safe and inclusive environment for same-sex attracted, intersex and gender-diverse students, staff and families, with the program ending tomorrow. With the confirmation last week that Tasmania is looking into removing forced transgender divorce for the state, allowing transgender Tasmanians to change their birth certificates without having unnecessary surgery to remove their reproductive organs, Tasmania's transgender community are coming together and asking their politicians, why change one law when you can change them all and become the state that creates true equality for its transgender community? Plus, New South Wales health organisation ACON has launched a new training website for health professionals and organisations. We find out about how this aims to improve their inclusion practices to better serve the LGBTI clients, customers and staff.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 Joy 949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
By this time tomorrow, South Australia's Safe Schools Anti-Bullying Initiative will be no more. The training and support program, which has been going for over a year, has helped to support schools to become a more safe and inclusive environment for same-sex attracted, intersex and gender-diverse students, staff and families. So what happens come Monday when students, staff or families need support, training or just advice when it comes to creating a safe space for LGBTI students? A new strategy is in development by the South Australian Department of Education, the Anti-Bullying Initiative, a new approach to anti-bullying, providing broader scale support, training and resources to help staff identify and address bullying and create safe and inclusive environments for all. Whether that will truly take place of the Safe Schools Anti-Bullying Initiative remains to be seen. We'll have to see how it develops, but even through SA's Safe Schools and Anti-Bullying Initiative will end on Friday, that doesn't mean the impact and inclusion they will have created for schools and students around the country will. Dean Arcuri spoke to Kelly, the previous program manager of Safe Schools and Anti-Bullying Initiative, as we look back at the impact of the program has had over the past year.
I feel very safe and respected here.
Like, I'm not separated from everyone and I can just be myself.
And for people that don't get it, I don't want to be the one that has to educate them.
We did a bit of a training session with the teachers, and so they've asked for some more specific workshopping on really creating change in their schools.
The recent rally in Adelaide was coordinated within 3 days and had, I think it was about 150 people there. It was just so beautiful to see pictures of. I wasn't able to be there because I was actually up regionally delivering Safe Schools training, which, you know, even at this last point, we've been out there at schools' request delivering training, but I was able to see the photos and hear the stories of the people who did go. And it was just so uplifting, and to hear those personal stories of how the program has impacted and supported people is just so powerful.
As of July 15, 2018, South Australia's Safe Schools and Anti-Bullying Initiative will be no more. It's been called a controversial anti-bullying program, and its removal and replacement with a broader anti-bullying initiative is something that Kelly, the previous program director, is still dealing with.
Really? Oh, there's some conflicting emotions that are going on. We're very really proud of the work that has been done and the differences that have been made, but really concerned that there's so much still to be done and the gaps that it's going to leave for teachers and students who are telling us they want ongoing support and want and need ongoing training to make their schools more inclusive. The program's only been going for just over a year now. Prior to that, I was in this space for 6 months before that in the Safe Schools Coalition. The initiative is quite similar. However, there's some really key differences in that we did not have any lessons for teachers to use as part of the initiative. So we were simply providing professional development and support for schools.
It must be very upsetting to feel like that's coming to an end and seeing the work that you're doing and the way you're doing that stop.
Yeah. Look, it is. But we're also hopeful that, you know, common sense will prevail and this need will be filled. Somehow.
The removal and replacement of the Safe Schools and Anti-Bullying Initiative doesn't replace or remove the impact that the team have done at schools all around South Australia, working with students and teachers to create a more inclusive space for all.
In the past year, we've actually trained over 1,000 educators. That's predominantly in schools on request where they will contact us and say, we're needing some support in this, please provide our staff with some training. We're also running school holiday workshops, a lot of those in regional areas where teachers were saying that they weren't able to get to the metro areas to attend training, so we would go out there. So over 1,000 educators trained in 12 months. Yeah, we're really proud of that. We also supported a large number of gender diverse students, so around about 40, just over 40. And that was where a school would contact us and say, we've got a gender diverse student here. How are we supporting them? Okay, what do we need to do to follow our department's policy and procedure around supporting gender diverse students, and how are we making our school more inclusive for them? So when I say supporting gender diverse students, we don't provide any counselling, but we would provide the school specific targeted support on how they would support that young person. And we're hearing this from parents that that was such an incredibly needed support, that they felt they were battling things on their own beforehand, going in and talking to schools about what their student needed. We also worked within 15 schools on supporting staff to support their student action groups. So those student action groups are things like maybe called a Gay Straight Alliance or a Pride Club, where students would actually try and create action in their school, getting posters up or flying the rainbow flag or having a safe space for LGBTIQ plus kids to go. So we were able to go to schools to support teachers on supporting that.
The Department of Education's Anti-Bullying Initiative, a broader strategy in regards to bullying in schools, is in development, which will include targeted resources directed towards high-risk student groups, including, but not limited to, same-sex attracted, intersex and gender-diverse students, disabled students and culturally diverse students. I wonder if they'll be taking on board any of the processes or procedures that the Safe Schools and Anti-Bullying Initiative have actioned and have shown work in a school environment in the past year.
The new education minister made it very clear that they weren't going to work with SHINE. We have absolutely offered the department support and have had some communication around that. There's some amazing people in the department who really want to make sure our young people are still being supported. So very minimal consultation, but I do know that they are looking at consulting with other community sectors.
The Safe Schools and Anti-Bullying Initiative has made big changes in schooling environments around South Australia, who for years have been saying they felt unequipped to be able to meet the needs of same-sex and gender-diverse students and have been asking for help in this arena. Not to mention the individual students who now can be their true selves in their schooling environment. Let's hope there aren't gaps in the new initiative that leave these areas left behind.
There's concerns that this new initiative is still in its developing stage, so there's nothing in place that could replace what Safe Schools has been providing to schools. I understand that the department's partnered, according to their website, partnered with expert consultation to provide some anti-bullying advice, support and training while the new strategy is being developed, but I'm not sure entirely what that looks like. And just concerns that until this new strategy is developed, it does appear that there will be quite extensive gaps. And certainly, you know, a statewide program that was able to go into schools and support teachers individually and provide that level of training, I'm not too sure how that's going to be achievable at this stage from the department point of view.
It's important to remember that this doesn't diminish the many, many achievements and the progressive steps that the Safe Schools and Anti-Bullying Initiative have made.
Everyone goes through their own journeys in life, and you should be able to adapt for each person.
People can't be seen as second-class citizens anymore and lesser than, or have to feel they have to hide.
Love is love, and you shouldn't feel ashamed, and it's a good thing for people to feel comfortable in their own skin.
When you're just feeling enclosed, I came here and I feel so open and so, like, normal. I'd use the word normal.
We delivered a Safe Schools Action Day last August. So that was around about 120 students and their teachers coming for the whole day to do some workshopping on intersectionality and making sure that if they were having gay straight alliances in their schools, that they were being inclusive of all young people. And we had the Minister for Education at the time come and do a Q&A, and it was just such an amazing space. The feedback the kids gave in that video was that this was a place where they just felt normal. And for some of them, it was the first time that they'd been around other LGBTIQ young people, and just this feeling of safety. But I also was contacted by a local school a couple of weeks ago. They said that one of the young people that attended, it literally saved their life. Having that moment where they were around people who supported them and just got them, according to this teacher, literally saved that young person's life. And I guess that just goes back to recognising the need for this, when we know that the rates of suicide for transgender young people is nearly one in two attempts at suicide, that we know that this stuff's really, really important. And we know that when they are supported, their educational engagement and their general well-being is so much more improved. This wrapping up is not indicative of their worth. This wrapping up is, you know, whether it's a political response to, you know, wanting conservative votes, however we look at it, that this decision to scrap this program is not indicative of our young people's worth. And there are teachers and other people who are doing amazing jobs who really want to support young people, and that they just need to find them.
There's a lot of queer people in SA, in schooling, who need to get together.
It's teaching us ways that people can cope.
It teaches people that bullying is unacceptable.
But it's also just interesting to see different perspectives.
Even people here who aren't queer, it can give a really good insight into this kind of thing for them.
That was Dean Arcurie with the previous program director of the Safe Schools and Anti-Bullying Initiative in South Australia. Now that that has wound up, delivering training and support to schools around South Australia, all inquiries and requests for support should now be directed to the Department of Education Engagement and Wellbeing Team on 08 8226 2069, or email education.engagementandwellbeing@sa.gov.au.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Last week, the Tasmanian Attorney General, Elise Archer, confirmed that the Tasmanian state government is reviewing the Births, Deaths and Marriages Act and is looking to stop forced trans divorce in the state. Currently, transgender Tasmanians can't change the gender on their birth certificate unless they have surgery to remove their reproductive organs. But Tasmania's transgender community are speaking up, saying it's time to also address the other barriers that prohibit transgender people from living full and equal lives. Tomorrow afternoon, Tasmania's transgender community will come together and stand tall as they begin to campaign for the rights of transgender Tasmanians. Dean Arcurie spoke with Tasmanian Gay and Lesbian Rights Group spokesperson Martine Delaney.
Well, forced divorce is obviously an important thing, but it's something that state government and territories have been told they have to do to comply with the amendments to the Marriage Act. And we just feel there's an opportunity here for Tasmania to take some really positive steps, correct some of the stuff that's gone on in the past. And I would say that Tasmania probably had the most draconian laws in regards to gender and diverse people in relation to cross-dressing. Cross-dressing was illegal in Tasmania, and between sunset and sunrise until 2000. Our surgery requirements were far more stringent and draconian than any other state or territory. And the record's not great. And we think there's now an opportunity for the government to address that in one hit while they're dealing with the issue of forced divorce.
The reality when it comes to issues in regards to the trans community is there are a lot of things that need to be tackled on this level. So how do you even approach that? What do you look at and go, here's a list of a lot of things that you can do something about right now instead of just focusing on this one thing that you have to do?
What we're doing is organising a group of sex and gender diverse Tasmanians, non-binary, trans, and preparing them to spend time talking to government, talking to opposition and other members of both houses of parliament to say, look, this is how this affects our lives. These laws around birth certificates, around forced divorce and surgery requirements really create big difficulties for us, and we would like you to address them. It's happened in other parts of the world, and none of it has caused the sky to collapse. The sun keeps coming up every day, and life goes on for everybody else.
It's actually really wonderful that when this issue has been put out there, as much as everyone goes, it's great, another state is going to be saying, you know, no more forced trans divorce. And it's actually wonderful that you guys have taken that opportunity and not waited and have stepped up straight away and gone, that's great, but...
We're in a good position to do that. Back in 2015, the then Anti-Discrimination Commissioner, Robin Banks, undertook a lengthy consultation and prepared a discussion paper for the government, which looked at the situation around the world, looked at the situation in Tasmania, and made a whole series of recommendations to the Attorney General and Cabinet on what could be done to correct that. So we've got that all there. And it would be a relatively simple procedure for the government to progress some of that while they're doing the forced divorce amendment that they need to do to comply with the amended Marriage Act.
What are things like for trans people within Tasmania right now?
It has certainly improved because there's been a lot more sort of media coverage of trans issues, some of which has been caused by the conservative right seeking to target trans people as the weak link in the same-sex marriage debate. There's been a lot more coverage and there's a lot more understanding of the issue. When I was young, when I was transitioning, nobody would have talked openly of a child undergoing a social transition while they're in primary school. And we've got that happening here in Tasmania, and we've got that happening in Catholic primary schools here. And again, you know, the sun keeps coming up every day and the sky doesn't collapse. It doesn't affect other people, but there is still discrimination, and you still have trans people faced with the fact that if they want to apply for a job, they have a birth certificate which shows a very different situation to their reality. There's still discrimination out there. Trans people are subject to some pretty ugly things at times, but it is slowly improving. I think the government has the opportunity to lead here and to affect change in societal thinking in a bigger way. It's a bit like the Anti-Discrimination Act, but, you know, and the repeal of gay sex laws here in Tasmania in 1997. In a way, the government taking that step and saying it's not illegal helped bring about a change in the way Tasmanians thought about same-sex couples. And I think the same thing can happen with trans stuff.
We have an opportunity now. There are so many important conversations going on in relation to marginalised people in our communities that haven't had a chance and an opportunity to have this voice. So it's really important for everyone else to actually get behind you all and stand with you guys and help. How is that something people can do?
People can do that in any number of ways. But, you know, it doesn't take long to write an email to a your member of parliament to say, hey, look, there's great things happening. Can we support this? Write a letter to the editor. You know? And even in day-to-day life, you know, not being freaked out and too scared to nod your head and say hello to a trans person. Because if you're seen doing that, then it has an influence on other people. They say, oh, they must be normal. Somebody else is treating them as a normal human being. Because I think the problem for trans people is quite, and you know, anybody whose gender identity doesn't fit within the norm, is that they're quite often seen and viewed as other, as different, and not simply as a variation on any situation. So it's just to treat sex and gender diverse people as people. You know, me being trans is just one aspect of my life. You know, I'm raising a child. I write movies and TV shows for a living, and I do a whole lot of other things, and I'm a good cook. You know, I'm a whole lot of other things aside from being a trans person. So don't use that as the one thing that marks me. And if people did that, it would make a difference. Look, I'm just entirely confident we can do this, and it's something that, you know, I think I had my first meeting with an attorney general to discuss this 14 a bit years ago, and it's taken a long, long time, but I think we're at a point where with goodwill and a commitment to equality from our politicians, we can fix this thing.
That was Dean Arcuri with Tasmania's gay and lesbian rights group spokesperson, Martine Delaney. Tomorrow, Transforming Tasmania begins their campaign, asking politicians to take this opportunity to not just change one unjust law and barrier for transgender Tasmanians, but all of them. If you'd like to sign the petition to stop forced surgery on transgender Australians, you can find the link on our social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
New South Wales health organisation ACON has launched a new training website for health professionals and organisations to improve their inclusion practices and better serve LGBTI clients, customers and staff. So how does it work? It's simple. You head to pridetraining.org.au and find out the best way to create a more inclusive working place for your staff and your business. Delivering an organisation or individual's access to that information into their own hands via e-training, businesses can actually reach out and get the help that they need at the click of a button. It is training after all, so there's a little more to it than that. But getting the right support in the workplace is so important, especially within our transgender and gender diverse communities, as well as the intersex population. We have repeatedly heard from members of our communities that when they go to medical professionals, they have to educate them or the GP simply doesn't know what to do. But training such as this helps level the playing field on a professional level and create greater understanding of the diverse needs of Australia's LGBTI communities. Accessing the information is simple and you can engage with it in the way that works best for you and your organisation. DNR Curie speaks with ACON's Managing and Training Coordinator, Joe Lon.
Why was it an important step to be able to set this website up in this way and allow this access for this information for health professionals and organisations?
You know, I think that it was important for us to be able to do this so that it was centralised in one place. Previously, we were hosting e-learning with a different provider and then kind of pushing people there. And so having it all in one place and having this registration all in one place is very important for us. And plus, it's kind of that payment side as well. So it can handle everything from, you know, the trainings that we have, plus the trainings that we're funded to do, for instance, by the Ministry of Health, which would be free for, you know, a healthcare professional. They're able to go in there and still register, and then it actually will register them for the course as well. So, you know, we're offering e-learning because that's something that we have had several requests for that, you know, in the rural regions of Australia. But then we also are able to come to any city and be able to perform, you know, trainings for organizations. We're going to be running public offerings in Sydney so that we can have a public course offering that's always going to be ongoing here that'll be run out of ACON in Surrey Hills. So we've already, you know, had several organizations from Melbourne reach out to us requesting training. So it's exciting to be able to expand.
Why was it important to set up a space like this and have training in this way, and why did ACON want to do that?
I think there's this need to make sure that LGBTI people and communities have better service and better healthcare, you know, options out there. And we really know that there's, you know, individuals that haven't had an experience and they experience roadblocks throughout, you know, trying to access service that really prevents them from getting the appropriate care and support. So with that, there's kind of this indirect impact of having poor health because, you know, they don't have the best options to go and seek out. And that can be related to, you know, past experiences or fear of not being taken seriously when they go to those offices or services, you know, fear of prejudice or discrimination or not even wanting to come out. And so there's a lot of this that if we teach people to be inclusive, that they will actually, you know, allow more people into their services and cater to more people, including those in the LGBTI community.
Do you think there's any concerns that, yes, we're making this more accessible and more convenient, but with it all being online, we cut away a voice of our community that exists or a space where we need to make sure people, to create greater understandings, hear conversations or hear from our voices?
Definitely. And, you know, part of the trainings, there are some that are going to be e-learning, but then there are some that are still in person. And we find, you know, having those facilitated sessions with somebody that is from the communities, walking them through, and especially people that are being introduced to, you know, the acronym LGBTI for the very first time, you know, having that person there so that they can see confusion in somebody's eyes really allows the learning to happen together. And we've seen, you know, great strengths around sharing those stories of people that are in the community. And that really ties in well with, you know, getting people to understand that we're just people. And we just want to have the same access to and care when we go into, you know, a service provider. And, you know, we did this survey. So one of our major projects that we're working on, which will be released later this year, is LGBTI suicide prevention for general practitioners. And it will be accredited through the RACGP. So, you know, those GPs can earn credits for taking this course. But one thing that we did is, you know, this needs assessment where we sent out the survey and, you know, contained statistics around our communities plus, you know, suicidality and what they knew about the rates and how they were different from the general population. And it was just astonishing to get some of the information back from general practitioners around what they thought was high or low, or even what they thought sexual orientation was. So we understand that there's this very big gap in this field that if we can set a baseline, that will make services so much more accessible. But then if we can actually work towards making services inclusive, that will just open the doors up to so many more people. There will be 20% off all through the month of July using the discount code RAINBOWLAUNCH at checkout. All of those notes or all of that information is available on the website as well, so if people don't see it, it's going to be theirs. We're really happy and excited to be able to kind of create this more inclusive space for people, and hopefully it provides better service out there for, you know, millions of people.
So I guess the important thing here is the fact that it's not just a, here you go, you've done this, you get a certificate, there's a tick, but you've created a really important database that gives people access to really get the basic understanding they need to be able to build what we need. Because I guess it's time for our communities to also create a space where we're turning around and saying, we've been saying this information for ages, so at least here is a baseline, as you say. This is what you can do so you can get this better understanding, and it's something we can build on.
Very much so. And our training is co-designed with community. So, you know, part of this suicide prevention training that we're going to be doing has people that have lived experience helping us, because somebody that knows the experiences that they've gone through in the health system, and they're going to help us make sure that GPs understand exactly what is needed for us. And so it's, you know, tying in the community in the development of all of the training that we go through.
The reality, though, what it means for both physical and mental health within the LGBTIQA plus spectrum, that's very broad. So how does the training hit all those notes? Because what that means is a very broad stroke.
It is very broad. And you know, we have specific trainings that are catered to, you know, somebody that works in an alcohol and other drug support service. And it really ties into, you know, the context of use around drugs in our communities and what that means for people. We have one that deals specifically with the aged care sector. So, you know, there is this fear of, you know, having to out yourself again when you enter into an aged care facility or you're working with a home care provider. And so being able to present those issues to those aged care workers allows that transaction and allows those conversations to happen a lot easier.
That was Dean Arcuri speaking with Joe Lon from the Managing and Training Coordinator at ACON. If you'd like to know more about the new training website for health professionals and organisations, improving inclusion practices and better serving their LGBTI clients, customers and staff, simply head to pridetraining.org.au.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
And that's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip you'd like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Tom Morgan.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.